Welcome to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm Barbara Jackson, your host, and we're joined in our studio by our co-host, Lee Miller.
And we're your career doctors.
Your Career Doctors is all about taking control of your career.
It's about providing you with the information, contacts, skills, and tools you need, both on the show and on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com.
Career Doctors also provides access to experts. Today, we have Caitlin Friedman. Lee, could you introduce Caitlin?
Yes. Caitlin is a principal in the New York City public relations firm, YC Media, and the author of the brand new book, The Girl's Guide to Being a Boss Without Being a Bitch. Now,
hi, Lee.
Welcome, Caitlin.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Good. Now, tell me, why did you write The Girl's Guide to Being a Boss?
Well, we actually wrote this book as sort of a follow-up to our first book, which was The Girl's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. After we'd been in business for 5 years, we realized that, you know, our biggest challenge was management. And we interviewed 60-plus women for the first book, and we asked everybody, what's your biggest challenge? They said the same thing, learning how to be a leader and how to really inspire your employees was sort of an ongoing issue for them. So we just wanted to jump in and write this book and see what other women had to say about it, get some advice, actually.
Great. Now, I teach a course on negotiating that's just for women, and people are always asking me, why do women need to negotiate differently? So let me ask you, why can't women just be good bosses? Why do they need to do it differently than men?
Well, I think that there's just some inherent differences for how women operate. So I think that what the main issue is, has been, at least for the past couple generations, is there hasn't been a lot of mentors for how women can be leaders. I think that they were taught how to manage, or they learned how to manage from men. And I think that just doesn't translate. For instance, there was a study done 3 or 4 years ago that actually proved that if a woman was going to take an authoritative position, that they needed third party validation. They needed someone to come in and say, you know, Marcia has been hired to be your boss. This is her background, and this is why you should respect her. But men coming into that situation don't need that validation. They're sort of granted that automatic respect. So I think that there's also a higher expectation for women bosses. I think that there's sort of an emotional context to the relationship with a female boss that men necessarily don't have to navigate.
Okay. Women have to sometimes create their own legitimacy, huh?
Yeah,
now, you use the B word in the title of the book. How do women bosses be tough when they have to be without being perceived that way?
Well, I think that it's got to be sort of twofold. I think that employees I think they need to let go of their baggage when it comes to how they expect their female bosses to treat them. Like I said before, that emotional element is really sort of crippling for both employees and managers. I mean, I don't think that anyone would go to a male boss and talk about sort of their emotional issues, but it happens to women bosses all the time where their reports will come in and sort of lay that on them. So I think it's twofold. I think that women have to learn how to manage better, be clearer and less emotional. But I also think that people need to, cut them a little slack and give them that respect that they give to male bosses.
Well, now, if a woman boss doesn't appear tough enough, aren't people going to try to take advantage of her?
Well, it depends on how you define tough. I mean, we think that if you're fair and you're clear and you project confidence, even if maybe you're not feeling necessarily confident, and you don't micromanage and you aren't emotional and you know your stuff, I think that you're going to get the respect that you need.
Would you say there's a double standard for women executives in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely.
And is that a fair thing?
I don't think double standards are ever fair. I think it's, but again, I think that this is going to change. I think, with books like this, and I think with more women owning their own business and more women taking leadership roles and actually actively being more mentors than managers, I think that this is going to change.
So you have some advice for women bosses on what not to do, right?
Yes, we do have some advice.
Want to share some of those with us?
Yeah, absolutely. We recommend that women bosses don't micromanage. I think that micromanagement happens a lot when people are sort of insecure with their position. So they tend to become more and too much involved in all the details that's going on. So we'd recommend not to micromanage because you're actually undermining your employee's initiative when you do that. I think that keeping emotion out of the workplace is really important. I think that women have a bad rap where this is concerned. There was actually a Sex and the City episode where Charlotte was, cried once in 10 years, and all of a sudden she was labeled the crier. So because, you know, there's this expectation that women are going to be emotional in the workplace, it's very important to not bring that into a professional environment. So those are two sort of big ones. I don't know how much time we have. I could keep going.
Yeah. Well, those tips apply to men as well, but I think your point about the fact that if women engage in behavior that is kind of stereotypically expected of them, it's magnified. When a man does that, and then men do those same things, and so that's good advice for men too.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that, yeah, the expectations from female bosses, you know, is there's just a lot of pressure on us because there hasn't been a great track record. There's been the generation above us, which was, you know, learned how to manage from men, and, you know, male style of management might not necessarily translate well. So I think that, you know, we're going to see some changes over the next generation or two.
Oh, I hope so. I have a daughter and a granddaughter. I have actually two daughters and a granddaughter, so I certainly hope we'll see some improvement in that regard.
Yeah.
Now you have a chapter in your book entitled Delegating is Not a Dirty Word. Why do women have a problem delegating?
Well, I think that women are used to juggling. I think that there's been plenty of studies done over the past 10 years. Women who are working and trying to maintain a home and family are trying to do both at the same time, and they are usually the ones that are spending more of their personal time on managing the household. So I think that because women are by nature and, you know, by their expectations used to juggling a lot of things, they're a little ambivalent about handing things off. But it's really important when you manage, because your job is really to support your people, to do just that. Because you need to support the careers of the people that work for you, and they're going to need experience, and they're only going to get the experience if you give them work.
That's good advice. Now, we've talked a little bit about some of the things that women shouldn't do. What are some of the things that women should do that are going to make them more effective?
Well, we definitely have noticed that a challenge that women have is being unclear. Instead of saying, you need to do X, Y, and Z by this time, they'll say, would you do X, Y, and Z, or could you do X, Y, and Z? Because, again, they're a little bit ambivalent about assigning tasks because, for whatever reason, they're just maybe not embracing their role as a leader. So that is really important, to be clear.
And that's really important when you're dealing with men, because I tell you, men are very linear. Like when someone tells you, you know, when my ex-wife used to say to me, you know, we're out of milk, I would just come home and say, I guess we're out of milk. As opposed to if she really wanted me to bring milk, she'd have to tell me, you know, go pick up a quart of milk. So men really kind of need that specific. I think everybody needs that kind of specific direction.
Right. No, I think so, too. I think that it's very important when you have people that work for you that you tell them exactly what you want and why you want it. It helps them to do their job better, and it also, it helps you because then you can plan for it.
How about dressing the part? Do women need to dress differently when they become the boss?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that it really depends on your industry. I think that if you own your own business, obviously you have more flexibility. I think that if you're in a conservative job, if you're in banking or finance or even real estate, then, yeah, I think that you need to dress the part. But I think that's pretty industry specific.
All right. Now, you interviewed a lot of very successful women bosses for the book. Did they all have something in common that made them successful?
Yeah, it's interesting because we interviewed successful bosses, and we interviewed it from a couple different points of view. We interviewed a lot of people that reported to them, and then we interviewed the bosses themselves. And the people that reported to them felt like they were really successful bosses because they had faith in their employees, because they really took their role in their, especially their female reports, life as more mentor than manager. They really supported them professionally, and I think that women, that will sort of instill a lot of loyalty in your staff.
Good. That's a very good point. Now, my daughter and I, when we did research on women leaders, showed that negotiating was one of the key skills women needed to be an effective boss. Could you share your thoughts on that?
On negotiating?
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you're the boss, you're not really going to negotiate with your staff because they're going to actually have to learn those skills. But I do think it's important if you're a boss to sell your services, to sort of sell your results above. That was sort of a trap that a lot of women we interviewed for the book fell in. They didn't know that now that they were promoted to a boss, that they actually had to start selling themselves to those above. And I think that when you do that, even when you're sort of down in the trenches working, you can't forget that that's also now part of your job.
Because your boss usually doesn't know what it is you do, so you
exactly.
better make
Especially
sure you tell him, right?
Getting promoted, right? And people start getting hands off where you're concerned. Then all of a sudden, you know, people are paying attention to your salary because you've probably started making more money. So that's definitely important to sell your accomplishments.
Good. Now, do you have in any other key advice to women when they first become a boss? Is there something they should do? You get promoted to be a boss. What's the first things you ought to do?
Well, we strongly suggest that people evaluate their teams pretty carefully. You don't want to swoop in and make a whole bunch of changes because then you're creating a really rocky environment for yourself. But you definitely want to spend the first, whatever, at least a month looking at who you have reporting to you. Are you staffed the way you need to be staffed? Are these the people that can get the job done? Do people need to change their roles a bit? Are they challenged? You know, what's the dynamics? We recommend that you get the lay of the land before you go in.
But then do you recommend taking action? Because sometimes women are a little too generous in terms of giving time when they need to make changes.
That's interesting. We do think, we say tread carefully. Get the lay of the land. But yeah, if you don't have the employees that you need, absolutely, you need to make some changes. The fact of the matter is you've been promoted to run the team. So, you know, if you've got a great team behind you, then you're doing your job. If you have a bad team behind you and it's not delivering the results, then actually you're doing a bad job as a manager. So you have to remember that even though you want to protect the jobs of, like, let's say people that you like and you don't like to sort of shake things up, that it's your job that's on the line at this point.
So once you get the lay of the land, then you need to make your decisions
make
and,
changes, yeah.
and take
yeah,
action.
Changes. Absolutely. Because, you know, you don't want to sacrifice your job because you want to be labeled like the nice boss.
Okay. Now, to wrap up, if you had to summarize what the key is to being a successful boss, if you're a woman, how would you kind of give that summary in a few sentences?
Well, we would say that even though it might be scary to have this role as leader, that you really, really need to own it on every level. You need to feel comfortable delegating. You need to feel comfortable with your authority. You need to feel comfortable making changes. And if you're uncomfortable, then fake it. Because you can't go into this relationship with an employee when you're their boss and be ambivalent about your role or maybe anxious about delegating, because they pick up on it. And what they're looking for you from you is they want you to help steer their career, guide the team, show them the vision, you know, give them some goals. So we really recommend that going in, you just embrace it the best way you can. And know that if you've been promoted or hired, then other people have faith in your abilities as well.
So confidence is key, and you have to exhibit confidence. And as I always say, you got to fake it until you make it, right?
That's what we say too, fake it till you make it. It's true.
Well, thank you so much, Caitlin.
Thanks, Caitlin and Lee.
Thanks,
it was a fascinating discussion, and I know our listeners will want to learn more, which they can do. They can grab a copy of Caitlin's book from our website, www.yourcareerdoctors.com. But right now we need to take a short break. Stay with us because we'll be back real soon.
As a professional trainer, I've found that there are five basic learning styles. The computer-based training from Macau works on all five. With Macau training, you don't just watch a movie or read a manual. You access videos, examples, and exercises as you need them. You can use Macau courses to improve your management skills or to become an expert at your computer software. To find out how to achieve more with Macau training, call us at 877-752-5329. That's 877-752-5329 or visit MacauCorp.com today. www.MacauCorp.com. Macau creates training that works. It's that simple.
Feeling alone in your career search? Not sure of which career direction you want to pursue? Maybe you have a direction, but you still need some assistance. An ideal solution would be a personalized career counselor or coach right at your fingertips and phone, wouldn't it? Someone who could immediately relate to you and to your situation without spending hours upon hours reviewing your experiences? Well, you know what? There is such a thing. Welcome to ReadyMinds, an organization created to assist you. Yes, you. One-on-one, in the privacy of your own surroundings, you'll work with ReadyMinds online and via the telephone. Whether you need resume assistance, job search assistance, or an industry review, your personalized ReadyMind counselor matches your skills, your values, and your interests to assist in your career planning. You heard me, career planning, not job finding. So let's get serious and find the right career fit, and then locate the best position for you starting today. Take control now. Find your answers. When you're ready, call ReadyMind at 1-800-225-8248 or visit their website at www.readyminds.com. You'll get personalized guarantee from the company's CEO, and if you mention your career doctors, you'll receive a 10% discount.
Welcome back to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your host, Barbara Jackson, and I'm here in the studio with our co-host, Lee Miller. That was a fascinating conversation with Caitlin Lee.
Yes, it really was. It should be, her book should be amazing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love when people go out and do interviews. So it's not just, here's what I think, here's what, you know, somebody else thinks. It's, here's what really is. Here's a story from someone who's actually doing business in the trenches. So I think that her book is just filled with such wonderful information. But I was struck by a couple of points that you and she made in your conversation, and I was thinking back to your book and about negotiating. And what came to me was that so many times the perception that other people have about us is not just about how we behave and what we do and our actions. It's about how whatever it is that we're doing matches up with what their expectations are about us, frequently before they may even know us.
Their you perspective.
Their you perspective. And so for a woman, I think it's really very important, much more important for a man, to first of all recognize that. And secondly, to sort of do an anchoring technique, as you would say in negotiating class, to make sure that we help people modulate their expectations more in line with what we really are. So, for example, what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, let's suppose we're the boss. If we're the boss and we dress in a what somebody might call a severe fashion or an aggressive fashion, that's sort of a power suit, they're going to be far less surprised when we come across in a powerful way. They're not going to apply the B word as rapidly because that's what our whole persona is telling them, particularly if they were expecting a softer woman. And why would they expect that? Well, as you say, 85% of all women are collaborative. So if I fall into the 15% of women who aren't collaborative, right away people aren't expecting that. Right away, they're getting something that's off base for them, and they're going to have to struggle to catch up to process that information. So I need to give them a tip about what's coming so that they're not caught off guard.
In other words, it's kind of what Caitlin said. You need to create your own legitimacy. men are given that legitimacy, you need to create it. And if your style is one of being, you know, competitive, then you have to signal that so that it doesn't come as a shock to the people who you're dealing with.
Right, because I think that a lot of times when people have a negative reaction to someone, which in the case of a woman is usually described with the B word, what we find is that it's not so much their reaction to what I did or said so much as it is the dissonance or the difference between what they expected me to do and what I actually did. So it's not so much me as it is their expectations and the difference between the two. Now, men we have a lot more experience with. We know what we're getting, generally speaking, when we're dealing with a man. We know what to expect. We know how they're going to behave. They don't deviate a lot. And as a group, you guys kind of work together.
Well, and also, it's actually the same thing for men. I mean, men are expected to be tough. So if a man cries, think about what happens when a man, you know, no matter what the situation. We had a vice presidential candidate, Ed Muskie, at one time. He cried. That was the end of his campaign because it's dissonant to what's expected.
So really what we need to learn to deal with, I think the point that we're learning here is that if we don't know what the other person's view perspective is, we have to go out of our way to give them a lot of clues about what they're going to get so that they don't have that dissonance, so that their expectations are either met or adjusted to be in keeping with what they're going to receive.
You have to manage their expectations, as you said, as we talk about that in terms of negotiating. You need to anchor what they are expecting.
Right. And what's important about that from a woman's point of view, and I certainly can speak to that being a woman, is that women have so many more options. I mean, guys either come in khakis and a polo shirt with a jacket over it if it's dressed down Friday or a casual work environment. Women have such a variety of clothing that they can wear. And let's face it, the very first thing you notice about somebody is what they have on. It's a tip. We're all looking for tips about what's going to happen next. We're all trying to read tea leaves. So when a woman comes in a what we would term a soft outfit, a very appropriate outfit, but one that isn't harsh, one that isn't signaling, I'm stressed out and I'm gonna get you first. Like, what was that woman in Cheers? Lilith, you knew what you were getting with Lilith. Well, if I'm not dressed like that, I'm not giving you any clue that I'm about to pound on your head. And so the pounding, maybe you expected it. Maybe you knew that you were in trouble when you walked into my office. But if I'm dressed as your grandmother and then I pound on your head, you're double angry at me.
Yeah, and it makes you look much harsher than in fact you are. And men to a certain extent have gotten that as well. I mean, that's one of the reasons there tends to be a pushback a little bit from the casual dress that we have seen to a more formal dress, because when you're the boss, you know, that signals the authority and that you can be a little tougher because it's expected. If you're casual and you need to do that, it's a little dissonant there as well. So I think it's doubly important for women because, as you said, they have such a wide range of options. It's not just casual or suit.
Right. And because, as Caitlin said, even though it's gotten a lot better since I entered the workforce, it's still not the most common supervisor situation to have your boss be or your supervisor be a woman. So until that becomes as frequent as it is with men being your supervisor, until we're all equally astute at dealing with men and women supervisors, I think it's incumbent upon the wise supervisor or the wise manager to give as many possible signals as they can about their personality, about their style, and not just say, well, that's my style, get used to it, because you never know when you're walking down the street what people are thinking about you as you're walking by them.
Yeah, and it goes back to really, you can control how people perceive you.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to a young woman yesterday who was getting some coaching from me, and she said, but this is my style. This is how, you know, I should be able to be myself. Well, when you're at home, you should be able to be yourself. But in a work environment, if what you want to be is successful, you have to play the game. And the game may not be to wear your style on your sleeve. The game to be successful may be to do what people expect, in the sense of signaling your intentions, signaling your style, so that people can track with you more easily. Because what you don't want is you don't want people to be embarrassed. You don't want, if I'm walking into a negotiating session with you or with anybody else, and I walk in there in sort of my shorts and flip-flops, they're going to think that I'm a little scatterbrained. They're going to think that I'm not the toughest nut on the planet.
Or that you don't take it seriously.
Or that I don't take it seriously. And if I do, they're then spinning their wheels so fast trying to catch up to match up the image that they're looking at with the play that's coming out of my mouth, that they're just kind of caught in the canyon.
Yeah, always remember that perception is reality, and you can create your own perception. And it's not only about who you are, it's how others perceive you that impacts on how they treat you.
So understanding the you perspective is just so essential here.
Absolutely. I mean, because that's, again, it's not about you, it's about them, because they're the ones you're trying to influence. And really, being an effective boss is about influencing others above you, influencing others at your level, and influencing others below you.
So I guess we better remind everybody that when we say you perspective, we don't mean, if I'm saying the word you perspective, I don't mean my perspective. I mean the perspective of the people I'm interacting with. If I understand their perspective and what they're going to do next and what they're thinking, if I really get into their head, then that's going to translate into different actions for me, different behaviors for me, so that I can track with them. And that, even though I'm the boss, that's my responsibility to do that if I want to be successful.
Right. And it's all about getting people to do what you want.
And we have some tools besides Caitlin's two wonderful books, which you can get on our website.
Yes, The Girl's Guide to Being a Boss, which is just out, and The Girl's Guide to Starting a Business will be made available on our website, and we really recommend them. They're excellent books. And in addition to that, we'll have my CD, The Art of Managing Difficult People, as well as... what else are we putting on?
I think,
The Woman's Guide to Successful Negotiating.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great addition. Do you have a prescription for us?
I absolutely do. My prescription for the week is, results are gender neutral, but how you work with others to achieve those results needs to take gender into account.
Well, that's a great tip, Lee. So thanks for listening this week, and remember, it's your life, your career, and your choice.